How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible.
Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day, especially when the season get hectic. I stay waiting on it like receiving a Nets pick. Nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth, you might even hear a story on Gigi. So in depth, they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth, you probably should pay him, but it's a freebie. Yeah, John Corrales and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. So you can miss me with the blah blah. No more Geno time, we watching Jay do the Zaza. Melis.
Hey there, welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Thank you for making us part of your daily routine, and we have got a special show today. I already love this show, and we haven't even started it yet. I am John Corrales, here today by myself with a special guest brought to you by Boston Paintball. Stick around for a special deal from Boston Paintball. And the reason why this show is so special to me is it mixes so many things that have been going on in the NBA world for us. We've had rivalry stuff with ESPN's 30 for 30 with the Celtics-Lakers. We've got a bunch of draft stuff with the Lakers making trades and Lonzo Ball. You see what I'm building up to? This is a Celtics-Lakers rivalry podcast with my good friend and archenemy at the same time, Chris Manning, who once upon a time founded LakerNation.com, diehard Laker fan. We go way back to the OG days of blogging on stone tablets and hieroglyphics. Now, you know Chris from the NBA 2K franchise. If you follow him on Twitter, at LD2K, you know he's the community manager for the NBA 2K and the 2K franchise. Chris, it's been a long time, my friend.
It has been. And you know what I love? After watching the 30 for 30 Lakers-Celtics, it made me realize how much I'd love to hate you guys. So I had to reach out. We had to chat because it's been way too long, John. But I hope you're doing well, my man.
I'm doing all right, man. You seem to be doing okay.
Yeah, things are good. Things are good. I can't complain. I mean, you know, there's a little shaky with some NBA news, but I'm sure we're going to get into all that because it's pretty exciting times. If you're not, I guess, a Warriors fan, because, you know, the Warriors kind of have this league on lockdown right now.
My favorite thing to happen to me recently on Twitter is that we had an exchange. Every once in a while, we'll have like a little back and forth, and the hardcore gamers know who you are, and they're like, oh my God, you know Chris Manning? You know LD2K? I'm like, yeah. We go so
way
far back.
Like, yeah, for sure. I mean, it's funny to think. I'm glad you brought up the blogging aspect, because I mean, both of us were blogging at a time where there was no blogs, you know what I mean? Like, that's what was always cool about seeing your stuff from day one. I remember dating back to like 07, 2007, you know, with the Kevin Garnett storyline and where he would end up. And, you know, it's just been fun to know you over the years. And even though you're a Celtics fan, you know, you're one of the good ones. I'm gonna give you that. That's about as far as I'm going to give you right there.
I was going to say the same thing about you as far as Lakers fans go. But yeah, we had like that budding rivalry with when Kevin Garnett was shopping around, I guess, for the trade, and there were all the KG and Lakers uniforms, photoshops, and all of that stuff. So, yeah, God, that really was before blogging really took off, because nowadays you can get a WordPress, you can get onto TypePad or something. You can make it look really, really professional. There's so many good-looking blogs out there. We started back when, you know, it was basically just forums and I wasn't even on a blogging platform to start. It was just a WYSIWYG editor, a what you see is what you get editor, where we would just kind of redo the front page all the time with no archives, no nothing. We just rearrange text boxes all over our site. Man, things have changed a lot in that time.
They have. Absolutely.
All right, man. So where do we start? I guess let's start because I want to incorporate some news into this podcast because a lot of Celtics fans are going to be listening for Phil Jackson losing his goddamn mind with the Knicks, talking about trading Kristaps Porzingis, coming out and talking to the media tonight, Wednesday night, as we're recording, talking about as much as we love Porzingis, you got to do what's best for the club. And in my 30 years, no one's ever skipped an exit meeting. Like, excuse me? Excuse me? Like, that exit meeting is going to be the thing that gets you to trade Kristaps Porzingis. And now he's talking about trying to move up to get Josh Jackson. Well, first of all, the Lakers have the number 2 pick, and the Celtics have the number 3 pick, both picks available for Jackson. First of all, I guess, what's your take on just trading Porzingis in general? And Phil being so tied to the Lakers, does it hurt your feelings to see him fail so miserably as an executive?
You know what? It actually does. You know, I have a lot of friends that are Knicks fans, and it's almost like today we were exchanging texts like during this thing as it's breaking, because it just started breaking about an hour ago before we were recording this. It was almost like I'm saying I'm sorry. You know, it felt like kind of like a funeral. It's like I apologize for your fandom as a Knicks fan. Like, I feel for you. No, but it's weird. You know, I've had a chance to meet Phil a couple different times in my life, and just a very interesting person, especially when you get into basketball conversations. Obviously, someone that is one of the greatest basketball minds of all time. You know, joining, in my opinion, Red Auerbach is one of the greatest coaches of all time, and Greg Popovich, obviously. But to see, you know, to see him have this kind of disastrous situation happening in New York is really shocking. And I don't really know who to blame more. Is it like more of a James Dolan kind of blame, or is it more of a Phil Jackson kind of blame? But, you know, in the press conference, as he was saying, it's time for Melo to play somewhere else, and it's time for us to potentially trade Porzingis because he missed an exit meeting, while praising and trying to get Derrick Rose back, even though he kind of took off in the middle of a season without contacting anybody from the Knicks organization. It's just really all baffling to me. So, yeah, I mean, you know, there's nobody that's really siding with Phil here, and I can't say that I'm siding with Phil here because I think trading Melo is one thing, and I think you could make a case and an argument for that. But trading away Porzingis, the only good thing, in my opinion, that Phil has done from an executive level with the Knicks is just asinine. It's really mind-boggling.
You want a crazy conspiracy theory that this is all bullshit, that he's making up the Porzingis trade rumors because he misses Jeannie Buss and he wants to call just to have trade talks with her and maybe rekindle their relationship?
I mean, you know, maybe if she, that's it. I've seen that on online too. You know, if he packages up Melo and Porzingis, hey, listen, I'm all about second chance.
Yeah, sure.
You know, right? You know, I think it's really crazy and interesting because as a Lakers fan, I'm actually sitting here kind of torn. And I know a lot of people are going to probably think I'm crazy for even suggesting that I wouldn't want Porzingis, but it's not so much that. It's just, where would he fit in the long-term vision? I've been a big believer in the Lakers standing pat. They have a lot of young pieces that I think are going to develop and grow together. Obviously, D'Angelo was a fan favorite, but I can see why why some players and fans would not want to play or be his teammate, obviously. You know, you're young, you make mistakes, all kinds of players do. But now he's a New Jersey Net, or I should say Brooklyn Net. I'm getting back in our podcasting days. But now he's a Brooklyn Net, so you know, they got Mozgov's $57 million contract off the books, so that's a big win if you know how important and how vital the CBA is in today's game. So, you know, in one way, I'm happy about that, but it would have been nice to maybe hold off on that trade for like a day, knowing that Porzingis is available. I don't know if the Lakers should trade the number 2 pick for Porzingis, but at the same time, if that's available and you can swing a number 2 pick and you know, maybe another player for him. Yeah, absolutely, you go after him. But I think it's your team that's actually in the best position to go get him, because if Ainge was ever waiting for a trade or to pull the trigger on some kind of talent instead of stockpiling picks or trading down, this is the time, right?
Yeah, look, this. If you look at this draft, I would say if you could somehow say with the third pick you drafted, in quotes, Kristaps Porzingis, then that's fine for me, because yeah, he's such an obviously unique player. I mean, they call him the unicorn for a reason. He's exactly the type of player you would want, and that's why it blows my mind. And I can't tell how serious this is. I can't tell if Phil Jackson really truly is so self-obsessed, such an egomaniac, that a player skipping a meeting is enough for him to say, well, screw you, you're out. Like, or if he's just blowing smoke and if he's just throwing things out there in a kind of mind game with Porzingis, and then at the last second he's going to pull back and be like, well, we were open to it, but in the end, we didn't want to do it. Because isn't that the type of that's a purely Phil move to me, to kind of dangle that out there and play mind games. And this is where I think he's that works for you as a coach. As a right. coach, that type of thing is a kind of, you know, motivation thing. As an executive, that's crap. That he completely botched the Carmelo Anthony saga. He could have easily, prior to last season, pulled him aside and calmly spoke to him and said, look, I know we gave you the no trade clause. Things didn't work out the way we thought. Let's talk. We feel like we have to move on from you in New York, but we're not just going to screw you over. Let's look at some teams that you might want to go to, and we'll kind of casually kind of start discussing with those teams what it might take. But this is our vision, and we have to change directions. And I think at least at that point, the player would respect a front office for being upfront with him, as opposed to what Phil Jackson tried to do, basically was run him out of town. And now it seems like he's kind of doing the same thing with Porzingis, trying to send him a message like, you don't screw with me, I'm the boss, you kiss my ring, and if you don't like it, we're gonna do this stuff. So that to me is what Phil Jackson seems to be doing here. Now, bringing this back to the tone of rivalry and Lakers-Celtics, the one thing that has separated Phil Jackson to me from Red Auerbach is Red always constructed the teams. Red's the guy that pulled off the Joe Barry Carroll for Robert Parrish and the pick that became Kevin McHale trade. He's the guy that took the chance to sign Larry Bird a year before he came out, and that obviously worked itself out. Now, Red also had his share of misses, but the kind of separating line is Red won all those titles as a coach, and he put those teams together. And now here's Phil Jackson winning all those rings as a coach and now trying to put a team together, failing miserably. Is there any sort of legacy type of thing that you think about in trying to fit Phil into the pantheon of all of these greats? Does this knock him down? Because all of us Celtics fans are sitting there saying, see, we told you Phil can coach, but Phil had all these great players and blah, blah, blah. He played mind games with those great players and it worked, but he can't put a team together.
Yeah, I mean, that. First of all, that's a really great point, right? Red had a hand in constructing those teams. I'm glad you brought that up, because going back to your original question, it makes me sad as a Lakers fan and as a Phil Jackson fan to see him, I mean, absolutely failing miserably, in my opinion, with the Knicks, because, you know, you want to see the Knicks kind of regain some sort of legitimacy within the league and some sort of respect within the league, but it's just not happening. And, you know, to sit there and suggest that you're going to trade Porzingis, who is an absolute gem, I mean, maybe outside of Kevin Durant, one of the most versatile players at his size, right? It's very strange. And I think, you know, from a Lakers fan's perspective, it's interesting to see what's going to happen to Phil's legacy, because I sit here and I go, it shouldn't affect it as a coach, but this is what he's going to be known for, because so many young fans, and I deal with a lot of young fans that think they know basketball a lot every day, they don't understand like the impact of what the 80s and 90s were to the NBA and what, you know, these people in particular, Red Auerbach and what Phil Jackson did for the NBA. And so it makes me sad that people will kind of remember Phil in some regards as this disastrous executive for the Knicks who, you know, just is trading away all their assets, running people out of town. I mean, I believe it was Chris Paul that said because of the way they alienated Melo, I'm not even going to look at the Knicks. Like, that's a bad thing. And, you know, as a Lakers fan, from my perspective, I say, you know, as much as people hated Jim Buss, at least he didn't bring on Phil Jackson in that same role with the Lakers. So that's a win. You know, Jim Buss had a couple wins that people don't give him credit for. I'm not a Jim Buss fan per se, but he had a couple wins. There was a CP3 trade that was not, you know, that was done before it was vetoed. He did bring in Steve Nash and Dwight Howard, which at the time of that trade, everybody was on cloud nine, and it just didn't work out because of injuries, and we all know how that story went. But, you know, that's a really good thing that Jim Buss kind of vetoed Phil taking a position in power to bring in personnel to the Lakers. So it's just a very interesting dynamic, and it does make me kind of sad that this is going to be what his legacy is to maybe a younger audience or a younger generation of fans.
Well, I don't want to harp too much on the Phil Jackson thing because we're – I mean, I can keep going on all day. But we're here to talk about a lot of different things. But just to put a bow on this, I still – I'm teetering because Phil Jackson, I do think, is a complete egomaniac. And yep. I think that he legitimately is upset at what Porzingis did. And I think he, Phil, is enough of an egomaniac where he would actually trade Porzingis in an effort to prove a point. And so we'll see. I think the Celtics, I don't know what the Celtics could give up. And if Phil is going to be, I can only say it this way, if he's going to be smart about this dumb decision, then he at least has to attach Noah or Melo to Porzingis. If you're going to be stupid and push Porzingis out the door, then you have to at least have some shred of intelligence to say, well, if I'm going to get rid of this unicorn, I'm going to attach one of these bad contracts and at least do something in that regard. So I don't know what the Celtics, I don't know exactly what I'm willing to give up. I definitely the third pick. Definitely not that Lakers pick that we potentially get in the deal for Fultz. I think maybe if we, you know, say the Memphis, I would happily give up the Memphis and Clippers picks and just do three, the Memphis pick, the Clippers pick, and I don't know about Jaylen Brown. I'm hesitant about that, but I haven't really thought it all through. But some package of that, I think, would be palatable to me. Let's move forward. Let's move towards the draft now that we're talking about the draft. You've got the second pick. Is it Lonzo Ball for you guys?
I hope so. I hope so.
How do you feel about the Ball family? I've been dying to get a Lakers perspective on the Ball family. And obviously, LeVar.
Mm-hmm. What? So I love him. I love LeVar. I think he gets into certain areas or topics of conversation that I don't respect his opinions on at times. But I think for what he's doing as a dad, as an entertainer, and people sometimes can't differentiate that. As an entertainer, he's brilliant. He's going to bring the hot take every time. He's going to get the headlines. There's a reason he keeps going back on all these media stations and all these shows and First Take and whatnot, because he's entertaining, you know, and he knows that. So I think he's good that he's brought a lot of attention to his son. That could backfire in a lot of ways. We saw what happened with Kentucky in the NCAA tournament. Don't think that there wasn't a little bit of some edge on Kentucky's, mentality when they were going at UCLA. But I think at the same time, Lonzo has done such a great job through all of this when he was in high school, when he was at UCLA, which is a big spotlight, and you have this personality for a father. Lonzo's always said the right thing, carried himself with poise and composure, and he always has never shied away from the spotlight. And I think there's something to say about the player, because once you get to the NBA, and you know this as well as I do, parents, friends, that stuff, when you're talking about the greatest teams of all time, great, you know, franchises, Celtics, Lakers, etc., they're not going to let that become a distraction. And if there's one good thing about the Lakers organization, they have dealt with every batshit crazy personality you can think of. So if there is a place for LaVar Ball to come around to, it's in his hometown of Los Angeles. Because once Lonzo is drafted to the Lakers, and I feel very confident he will be, especially after the D'Angelo Russell trade of yesterday, I feel that it won't be that big of a deal. You'll have LaVar the entertainer, but that's not going to necessarily connect with Lonzo Ball, the Laker, if that makes sense.
Is this a deal where L.A. is just so different than Boston, where in L.A. this kind of shit is just expected?
Maybe. I mean, you know, we've, like I said, we've seen all those personalities before, whether it's players, friends, family, in terms of the Lakers organization. So I don't think it's as big of a deal as some people are making it out to be. Personally, and there's other things too, like establishing a shoe brand, right? A lot of people would probably like to do that. There's a lot that goes into that, so you got to give props where, you know, the credit is due, because it's not a simple thing. And I think, you know, whether you agree with it or not, I think it's extremely ambitious from LaVar to set up the big baller brand and to have his kids, you know, on their way to success. And for me, I just look at it as LaVar's kind of going to be the entertainer. And there's a lot of personalities that have come and gone through Los Angeles. But Lonzo, if you look at how he answers questions, how he conducts himself, there's nothing to worry about. You know, LaVar's not going to be there on the plane with him every single night traveling from city to city. That's just not going to happen. So I'm sure we'll have our hot takes. I'm sure people will find it entertaining or hate it. And that's okay, because, you know, we had Kobe Bryant, the most polarizing player potentially in NBA history, right? So, you know, it's going to be one of those things where I think the spotlight for Lonzo, the story of Lonzo Ball, in a very critical period for Laker fans and Laker history, because the last couple of years have been, quite frankly, some of the most embarrassing in Laker history. So I think getting somebody like this, the karma behind it, the way that he conducts himself at his young age in Lonzo Ball, I don't worry about LaVar Ball. I'm actually really excited and welcome Lonzo to this squad, because I think personally as a player, he's one of those great visionaries when it comes to seeing the floor and elevating, you know, those players around him in a big way.
Yeah, he's definitely a potentially great player. There's no doubt about that. I think it's just funny to see the dichotomy, because for Celtics fans, when I talk about things like Boston paintball, I see Boston Celtics fans lining up at the paintball range with just big pictures of LaVar Ball all over the place and them just firing paintballs at his face. And that's it's not something that Boston Paintball offers, but they should. However, though, guys, Boston Paintball does offer a lot of fun things. You've known them for more than 20 years. In fact, they've been in business in New England for 25 years. They started out in the shadows of the old Boston Garden on Causeway Street, that old rickety place where a lot of these Celtics, Lakers memories were made. They were right next door while it was happening. They started back in 1992, and they've been leaders in the industry ever since. You got three options for Boston Paintball. You can do indoor night play in Chelsea, you do an outdoor competition in Woods Balls Fields in Maynard, or you can go and check out the real-life 23-building apocalyptic cityscape in Ashland, complete with a hospital, airplane, army deuce, so much more over there. And they've got options for everybody. Kids as young as 8, they're playing this thing called Splatmaster. There's a low-impact classic paintball for players who are 10 years old, a little bit younger, doesn't hit them as hard. They can play and still not be, like, running around hurt. And the older guys, like us, can go out there and play the regular private group play and live out our Rambo fantasies. So hopefully, man, it would be so great if they had, like, purple and green paintballs. So if any of you Lakers fans came out to Boston, we could set this up where it's just purple and green just firing at each other. It'd be awesome. Go to BostonPaintball.com to make your reservation online. You get video tours of the facility, and if you use the coupon code GREEN, you're going to get $50 off a group package. That's BostonPaintball.com. Use the coupon code GREEN when booking to get $50 off group package.
Napa know-how.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.
Yeah, Alonzo is in Boston. We're such it's at the heart of this Celtics-Lakers rivalry. The blue-collar Celtics and the Showtime Lakers, you know, the buses, gym with, you know, the Playboy Mansion parties, and all of the celebrities around. A guy like LeVar Ball kind of fits that like motif. And people in Boston hate that shit so much that they are completely turning a blind eye to Lonzo, even though he's, along with Markelle Fultz, who is no longer potentially a Celtic, was one of the two guys that was seemingly a franchise-transforming player. Now, the Celtics traded away Fultz, the opportunity to get Fultz. What do you see from a Lakers perspective when you see Danny Ainge doing something like that? And you look at this draft. Did you like wonder what the hell he was doing, or did he make sense to you?
I kind of understood it if Fultz wasn't their guy. And, you know, I think they maybe Josh Jackson. I heard today that they were interested in Tatum, I believe. You know, to me, it's interesting because Danny Ainge has all these first round picks. So is it Porzingis? Is that the piece that you're waiting for to go after? If it's not, what is, you know, I mean, this is the interesting thing about looking over at Boston. Cause I look at that squad and I think it was really fun to watch Isaiah Thomas. I'm going to give him some props for wearing Kobe's. Just make sure that you realize he wears Kobe's out there while he's doing his thing. But I love watching Isaiah Thomas. I think he played with passion. He played with heart. There's a lot of Isaiah Thomas haters. I think he's an absolutely phenomenal player to watch, and he really was unbelievable throughout the year, this year in particular. But that being said, I thought they needed like a Jimmy Butler type of player, a scorer. You know, I think if they sign Gordon Hayward, that's going to be a huge positive for them. So I don't know what they're looking for in the draft, and I think trading down doesn't necessarily hurt the Celtics if they have a plan. But man, when that piece becomes available and you said it earlier, you'd give up all these picks for Porzingis. What better team is in place to give up future picks than the Boston Celtics, right? So to me personally, I think they should go after like a Porzingis or maybe get some sort of deal with Jimmy Butler going. And if he's off the table, you know, most certainly sign to Gordon Hayward, who's, you know, I've watched a lot of him because he plays with the Jazz and I see him a lot in the West. He's really grown as a player over the last couple of years. I mean, he is a bona fide stud right now. So I think joining up with his old coach in Boston is something that's rumored, heavily rumored, and I think that'll benefit you guys. But to me, you know, I sit back and I just wonder, what is it going to take for them to finally get that next piece? Because right now Boston's problem is they need to get through LeBron. And then the bigger problem for every team, for the Lakers, Celtics, everybody else in the league, is they need to now try to compete with the Warriors. And I will say this, there's not too many pieces out there that can compete with Kevin Durant. Porzingis is one of them. So whoever's going to potentially go after Porzingis, I think is going to make that franchise a lot better. And if you guys get a Gordon Hayward and let's just say you somehow pull off a Porzingis trade, which I don't think is out of the realm of possibility. I think Celtics is like the most possible destination, personally speaking. That would change, I think, you guys up and put you in a point of contention in terms of the title. And you could say we were there last year, but again, the Warriors are on such a different level. It's such a unique situational kind of odd situation. You know, it's very interesting to see how that all came together. But now we all have to wonder how to take down this, you know, the Warriors. And I think Porzingis to a team like Boston would be something that would be very interesting to watch. I mean, what, Porzingis is 21. I think his numbers were ridiculous last year.
Yeah.
You know, when you started to compare him with the rest of the league.
Yeah, and especially since he was being used so poorly, in my opinion. You know, it's an interesting point with the Warriors. If we're building a Warriors killer, you got to look at mismatches, right? You got to look at things that they don't have. And, well, nobody has a Porzingis, but that would be hard to guard for them. Who would guard Porzingis? And so you would have to run an offense that featured him heavily, which obviously a guy like Brad Stevens, unencumbered by the Zen master's ego, would be able to use Porzingis the right way, and surround him with a little bit more shooting. That would be an interesting kind of wrinkle, because you'd have to double him, right? You'd have to figure out
Absolutely.
A way. So if you start doubling him, then you start opening things up, and depending on who else the Celtics could get and depending on who they've given up, there's at least the beginnings of that kind of matchup issue where, yeah, obviously the Warriors have all the talent and obviously they would still be heavily favored, but you still have that matchup that makes you go, huh, if this, then if that, then maybe you have some, you have a better series than what we just saw anyway. So let me just go back to something you just said as a complete side note.
Sure.
I'm a big sneakerhead. I have no loyalty or disloyalty to any shoes based on players. Like, I'll wear LeBron sneakers. If they look good and feel good, I'll wear them. Kobe's, I had a pair of Kobe 6s that I played in. They were by far the best basketball shoe I've ever worn. They just... An awesome shoe to play ball in. So when you talked about Isaiah wearing Kobe's out there, they constructed a really good shoe for Kobe Bryant. And I will just say that just aesthetically and the durability, the construction of the sneaker was actually really, really good. And there's a reason why a lot of guys out there play in the Kobe sneakers. I don't care that they say Mamba. I don't care. I mean, he's my... His portion of my $100-whatever, it doesn't mean anything to him. And I don't think it makes me disloyal, because what I do is I customize them in green anyway. So it's my little shot at these guys. But that was a hell of a shoe. Okay, that sidebar aside. excuse me. And I don't want to keep you too long. We got a lot to get to. I want to get to the heart of this Lakers-Celtics rivalry. You mentioned earlier you deal with so many young players, and I think a lot of young people, and I think a lot of listeners to the podcast may not fully grasp the deep nature of this rivalry. And we have both seen the best of the actual rivalry. Because in the 60s, it was basically, yeah, the Celtics and Lakers met a lot, but the Lakers never won. They never beat the Celtics for the title. 70s, they didn't beat the Celtics until the 80s. And the 80s was this magical time in Celtics-Lakers land, because not only was it a continuation of the rivalry, it was also the rivalry that saved basketball. It was Bird and Magic that saved the NBA at its lowest point. They came along, and that 1984 series was the beginning of the NBA's huge, huge turnaround. And then Michael Jordan came along and just took it to a different level. But if it wasn't for Bird and Magic, and if it wasn't for those amazing Celtics and Lakers teams, just so full of talent, so awesome, so perfectly LA, so perfectly Boston. If it wasn't for that era at that time in NBA history, we might not even be doing this. The NBA might be a fringe league at this point.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point. It's something that most certainly elevated basketball. It was storied throughout the history of, you know, the NBA for sure. And, you know, it's something that, like, personally every day I kind of, when I talk to my dad, we have such a close bond about basketball. Like, we were at Kobe's last game. Growing up, I was always at Laker games with my dad. Even when I was a teenager, he was always bringing me to games. And there was just something special about discussing basketball with him and us talking about the Lakers-Celtics rivalry. Then seeing a new chapter, you know, when Kevin Garnett got traded and they constructed that team, and then Pau Gasol went over to the Lakers, and that 3-year, you know, time-wise, just that whole new chapter was so special for me because that was Kobe's fifth ring. I mean, 2010 finals. If any Laker fan tells you that, that was great. Those were awesome. They're lying. That was the most stressful finals of all time for, I think, Laker fans. And, you know, I really wish Kevin Garnett did not get hurt in 2009 because I feel like we would have had a best of three finals kind of situation there. So that was unfortunate in 2009 that the Celtics couldn't get there. And I remember things like this as a Lakers fan because I want the best of the best and I always wanted competition, which, you know, I'm going to transition into something. You were talking about how it transcended basketball. It's interesting to me that now we're in this new era of friendship. The more that I study up on the history of the Lakers and Celtics, and, you know, I had an opportunity to sit down with Jerry West back in 2009, and he was going on a radio interview, and he was just kind of sitting there in a room and we were with Fox Radio at the time. And I sat there and I went, you know, I'm going to go talk to him because no one's talking to him. And I sat down and he opened up about stories that I'm definitely not going to repeat on a podcast. We'll chat about them someday. But it was amazing to hear his take on stuff you would never hear about when it comes to Lakers Celtics and what it meant to somebody who lost so many times to the Celtics. And he even came out and said recently that maybe he would have tested free agency out if it meant winning, you know, and not losing all those times. So it was interesting to hear his take, and it was something that I kind of kept close to my heart. But it's interesting how the NBA now is in this friendship kind of phase. And I don't know if it's necessarily LeBron kind of opened those floodgates up. I think many people would say he did with what he did in Miami and them kind of planning around Team USA time to maybe team up. But it's a very different league, and I'm not going to say it's less competitive. I don't necessarily think that's true, but it is interesting to see how the league has become this friendship type of league and everybody knows each other. You know, even recruits coming in or people that are on the fringe of being drafted, those guys know each other. They have bonds. They talk to each other. They text each other. They have, you know, they work out together. It's just interesting to me. I kind of feel like, and maybe this is me, and maybe it was just a special circumstance being a Lakers fan and being, you know, I tell Laker fans all the time, it's rough right now, but we had Kobe Bryant for 20 years. We saw time capsule shit, as I like to call it, with Shaq and Kobe. You know, that's stuff you won't ever see in your lifetime again. Celtics, time capsule shit throughout the generations. It's like we are spoiled as franchises. So I wonder if it's like a Lakers-Celtic fan type of thing or if it's just, you know, the league is now just going into this new era of like, I want to play with my friends. I just feel like something's missing there in terms of the competitiveness. You know, Kevin Durant being up 3-1 on the Warriors and losing ultimately that series and then going to where he was most appreciated. There's no doubt, no question, and I've said this, that he maximized his basketball potential and he absolutely performed and he absolutely led the Warriors to that ring. No question, no doubting it. I already knew Kevin Durant was great. It was almost like I lost a lot of respect for him as a fan of the game because he did that. You know what I mean? LeBron James, when he was losing to your Celtics, he didn't necessarily up and quit and join the Celtics. Now, he did something in Miami, but it just felt different. But at the same time, this league is about being comfortable and playing with your friends. And that's kind of where this younger generation, I feel, when I watch the NBA, I'm starting to see that kind of becoming a trend. And that's what's interesting to me because – like I said, maybe it's a Celtics-Lakers thing, but I love the, I want to tear your throat out, I'm going to clothesline you, you know, onto the ground. Like Kobe Bryant, Paul Pierce going at each other, Ron Artest and Paul Pierce, you know, elbowing each other before tip-off of the NBA final. That kind of stuff is what made this rivalry so special, and I tell people all the time that aren't Lakers or Celtics fans, I can't wait for us to get back in it. Like, you guys hate Lonzo Ball, LeVar Ball. I want to hate you guys in the finals, and I want you to hate Lonzo Ball in the finals. I want to get this back to Lakers Celtics, and so now the storyline in the NBA becomes who's going to take off the Warriors. You know, who's going to take out the Warriors next year? I don't know if somebody can next year, but I think our franchises are definitely in a position where in the near future, you know, when this Warriors reign ends, I think we can make some moves. And I'm praying on the Lakers side. I think you're a little bit more secure in that regard, but. You know, I want to get it back to Lakers-Celtics and rewrite this new era and this new chapter because, honestly, as a basketball fan, it will never get as good ever as it is with Lakers-Celtics. And I think a lot of the Celtics fans will agree with me.
Yeah, especially those of us who are my age and older who have who remember those days. The it's interesting, and now I always root for the Lakers to fail, as much as I agree. Like, if the Lakers are going to be good, you might as well be great so we can meet each other in the finals. But I'm not beyond, you know, laughing and taking some Schadenfreude at the Lakers' just abject failures over and over again. Like, a 15-win Lakers team, I love it. Just sit there and suck. I want to point Nelson style. Ha ha! And just enjoy you guys being terrible. At the same time, if you're not going to be terrible, let's go. Let's right. do it, and let's get it on. Like, it's interesting to talk about the changing aspect of the NBA, the dynamic that has come about. For a couple of things, free agency has changed the entire way everything works, because back in those days, players didn't move. Free agency came about right. in the middle of the 80s, and no one really started testing free agency until after the Celtics and the Lakers' glory days had passed. So I don't think it's easy for these old guys to say, I never would have done this. I never would have done what Kevin Durant did. Yeah, you can say that with all of your heart and believe it fully, except you didn't come up in the AAU system. You didn't play on all-star teams throughout your youth with these people who are rivals. You haven't developed friendships with a lot of these guys the way these guys have. You didn't have, you also didn't have $20, $30 million per year players that you as a Magic Johnson or Larry Bird, you make a couple million. Like, that was good, but your paychecks, when you make $2 million a year, after you pay off your agent and all that stuff, your paychecks are not they're not exorbitant. There's a lot of numbers on there, and you know, those of us who work 50 plus hours a week don't really fathom those numbers. But you take Larry Bird's paycheck and you put it next to LeBron James' paycheck, and like, LeBron spends Larry Bird's paycheck at the bar. So that level of money that's around now changes the lifestyle. You're free to go do these things, and you've got other super rich players. You kind of end up in the same super rich places, and you got agents who do these, you know, hold these events, and they represent these different players from different teams, and you all work out together and you all hang out together. And then there's the shoe deals that didn't exist the same way they did back then. Yeah, they had the Converse weapon ads, but think about that. The Larry Bird and Magic Johnson story, since we're talking about friendship. Those guys hated each other, right? But the Converse weapons ad that Magic did in Indiana, he went to Indiana to do that iconic ad where Magic rolled down this dirt road in a limo, and they had this one-on-one kind of thing in the Magic purple and gold Converse weapons and the Larry Bird black and white Converse weapons. And at that point, they actually started to develop a friendship.
Right. I mean, that's a good point. Yeah. I mean, listen, I'm not judging or criticizing or saying it's anything or any which way. It's just interesting to kind of think about that dynamic. I think when people start to look at legacy, and a lot of people look at Boston and Lakers as great, I guess, traditional legacies in the history of basketball, it's going to be interesting to see how this kind of plays out. Because one thing about people always ask me, do you think the Warriors are bad for basketball, right? And I say, no, they're not. Because if you look at the ratings, they were up the highest since 98, right? So right. People want to tune in and see superstars, no question. Now, is it bad for the level of competition in basketball? Absolutely. You know, and I think when you look back on Kevin Durant's legacy, for example, that's going to be one that's going to be debated a little bit. I think people are going to look at that. You're already seeing it with LeBron James. He's in the middle of putting up numbers last year and this year that nobody in the history of the NBA Finals has ever done. Yet every night there's something criticized about LeBron and he's compared to Jordan. It's like, let him do LeBron. Like, wait till it's all over. Like, now I'm more at ease at the Kobe arguments now that Kobe's retired, because it's like my mind is at peace. You know what I mean? And when he was in the league, it was different. But like, it makes me realize and mature as a basketball fan. You don't always have to compare players. But I guess what I'm saying is, it's interesting that we're moving into a new era of basketball, and it's not necessarily a bad thing, but it, you're going to start seeing more super teams pop up here and there. And that's where I think it kind of hurts the level of competition. Like, honestly, how bad do you feel for those kind of mid-level teams right now? Like, with what Durant did, it almost paralyzed the league. And it was circumstantial, too. It was a very special circumstance where, you know, they found almost a loophole, and because of Steph's ankles, he got paid what he did at that time. It was a lot of things that went right, for sure. But, you know, next 2-3 years are going to be tough. But I think it's an exhilarating story nonetheless about who's going to take down this team. But I'm sitting here talking about super teams, and now I look at the Lakers, and they kind of pulled the first trigger to step one of building a new super team to compete with the Warriors, whether you know, want to believe the rumors or not. But it is interesting to see how the game's evolved, and it needs to evolve, you know. Even basketball, just the way the game's played, it's just so drastically different than it was even 10 years ago. So I think, you know, with the influx of more athleticism and talent, I think you've seen somewhat of basketball IQ go down, but there's definitely a lot more exciting situations because of that. It just makes me question, like, what are the legacies of these players going to be? Is it going to continue to be, I'm going to go play with my friends, I'm going to create super teams, or is it going to get back to a place where there's more parity? And that's, I guess that's the question. And I know it's funny to mention parity being a Lakers fan and talking to a Celtics fan base, but, you know, it just feels different. But I'm glad that, like, Cleveland won, you know, a franchise that never won a title in the fashion that they did. And even before that, it had been, what, 44 years, something like that, since the Warriors last won their title 3 years ago. So I'm glad that we're seeing new teams get in. I just want to help get my team back in it. You know what I'm saying? I'm a little bit of an impatient Laker fan. Patience is a virtue, though, and that's something I have to learn.
Yeah. You guys have had your run. Jesus, chill out.
Absolutely. I you know what? I agree. I tell Lakers fans that all the time, man. Like I said, time capsule shit. Our franchises are lucky to have enough of those for a lifetime.
It's true. But of course, in the moment, no one cares about that. All we care about is the next one. You know, I'm not so worried about the super team thing. A lot of people seem to be, and I get it, but that, first of all, like you had mentioned, the Warriors super team was a complete fluke. That was not possible had so many of these other things not happened.
Right.
And so I'm throwing that out as a fluke. Now, I'm not completely obviously dismissing it, because it's a fluke that's going to shape the NBA for the next 3 years probably, but also, there are rules in place that make forming these super teams very difficult. And how many teams are going to be in a place to add multiple stars, to have that kind of cap space, and then keep those multiple stars for more than 2 or 3 years? And that's kind of how things work in the NBA anyway. No matter how you do it, teams go on 2-3-4 year runs. That's everybody. The Celtics, had they, like you mentioned, the Kevin Garnett injury, had Kevin Garnett not gotten hurt, the Celtics were in prime position to potentially win 3 titles in a row. They won one. They had another one where they were clearly on. That next year's team was better, off to a much better start, and then Kevin Garnett got hurt. And then the next year after that, Perkins got hurt. The Celtics were right there. They were leading all the way up until the end of the game. What's the difference? Like, no one, because you just sit there and think, well, it's not a foregone conclusion. Well, they still could have won 3 in a row. The Warriors could win 3 in a row. It's all the same shit to me. So
yeah.
I personally don't see it. How many guys are really, really, really going to be willing to take less money to form these teams? LeBron did it. Yeah, LeBron's also got a shoe named after him. Kevin Durant's doing it. Durant's got a shoe named after him. That $2 million that he gave up, he can make up somewhere else, no problem. They are special, special cases. Most guys aren't going to be able to give up $3, $4 million for the sake of winning a few rings or trying to win a couple of rings, because they're not going to make up that money like some of these other guys do. It's easy for LeBron. It's easy for Durant. It's going to be easy for Harden. These guys can make up money. Just, oh, fine, I'll just do another ad. Give me something else to pitch, and I'll go make my money up that way. You know, Kevin Durant could go pitch Listerine, and they'll pay him $2 million or three or four, whatever it is. He doesn't give a shit. But if I am a middle-of-the-road player, if I'm Isaiah Thomas even, a second-team All-NBA, people aren't knocking down his door for a million ads. He would be justified in saying, no, I'm going to take what I can get. Guys of that level, John Wall, he's got his own shoot, but he's not part of a big multi-camp. Like these guys need to maximize their dollars. They're not going to be so anxious to give up money like these megastars do. That's a lot of words for me basically to say I think this thing's going to work itself out, and I'm not so worried about super teams as much. I'm not as worried as some other people. Okay, let's start to wrap this up. I want to ask you, do you have a favorite moment in the Celtics-Lakers rivalry?
That's a great question. I mean, I kind of split it up.
I'm sure there are multiple answers.
You know, yeah, I have to go with losing in... So it's kind of like a two-part answer. So losing in 2008 by 39, watching Pierce dump the Gatorade over Doc Rivers and seeing the celebration and the look on Kobe's face. Because what that did was that really like set a fire. If you remember in 2008, Kobe had won MVP. He was, you know, taking his teammates out, buying them watches, being the support of Kobe Bryant, changed the way that he's kind of a teammate. And then they lost to the Celtics in the finals the next year in 2009. And man, I wish Garnett was not injured. I really do. I mean that as a Laker fan. They came back and he was just ruthless. I mean, back to if you don't want to win, you're getting kicked off. You're the hell off this team. You know, you're out of here. And I love that because that was something that obviously Kobe's my favorite Laker of all time. I grew up and I watched every game of his. That was something so special because I remember just the complete attitude of the team changed. And quite frankly, I think it changed because they lost to the Celtics and it stemmed from the revenge that Kobe wanted. And you saw the personalities and the kind of the DNA of the team change. And it was almost like they were hell-bent on revenge. And that led me to my final and favorite memory, which was the 2010 NBA Finals. And it wasn't because it was enjoyable. I don't think it was enjoyable for Celtics fans. I don't think it was enjoyable for Lakers fans. But what it was is... it was such a high level of basketball and such an insane, intense rivalry just at the peak. Both had won. Now here they are clashing again. And that series was unbelievable, man. Like, that is something that I'll never forget. So my favorite moment most certainly was that Game 7. Kobe kicking the ball over to Ron Artest. Him shooting that three, kissing the sky. That was in the final seconds of the game. That was the only time where I kind of... you know, let out a sigh of relief because the series was so close. And for being a Lakers fan and knowing that was Kobe's fifth ring and in the fashion that he wanted against that level of competition and how hard that was, getting that fifth ring for me against that franchise and that organization and, you know, just peeking a little bit closer to that record of NBA championships or right below you. And that also bugs me as a Lakers fan, as all Laker fans. you know, that was something that was really special. And I knew that in the moment I kept telling myself, like, take this all in because it's one of those things where you're not going to see this too often in your lifetime. You know, something that high of level of basketball and something that means that much, that gives you that kind of emotional reaction every second for seven straight games, you know. It was something really special, man. And I know that's kind of a broad answer, but that whole entire series, every second was so stressful and made me so anxious that I miss it now that I don't have anything like that as a Lakers fan. You know, we've been kind of in, you know, rebuild mode and whatnot. That was definitely my favorite Lakers Celtics thing. Other than that, it's probably Magic Skyhook. That's a pretty easy one.
I figured.
And even the clothesline on Rambis is probably one of my favorite memories, which is more of a pro Celtics thing. But if you look at what that did and that's so iconic in that era of basketball, you know, and I tell my parents every day, look, I'm 30. I tell them every single day, like, you guys could have, you know, banged me out a little bit earlier. Like, 5 years. 5 years is all I needed. And you know, I would have been seeing the prime, you know, Lakers-Celtics rivalry in the 80s because I was born in 86, obviously. But I go back and I read and watch, and I'm a student of the game. And when I was younger, especially doing all the videos, you know, I locked myself in a room and just watched as much as you can. And now you have more access with things like YouTube and the NBA archives and all that stuff. But I would just study and listen and learn because I'm a basketball junkie. You know, my whole entire life has been about basketball, and that's just something I love to read and watch. But those would probably be my favorite memories, those three things in particular, the 2010 series, Magic Skyhook, obviously, and the Kurt Rambis clothesline, because that was just so that was just such a great representation of what that rivalry, how intense that was in the 80s. Like, you know, you see that today, that's probably like a 20 game suspension.
Oh God.
You know, yeah. You know, they're going to make up a new flagrant foul level for that. You know, I love it. And that was what was so amazing about that rivalry, was it was not bullshit. It was, we hate you, you hate us, and we want to kill you. And I thought that was just, for me to be a fan of Kobe and to watch how the Celtics were in their prime and how they felt about stuff, you just kind of adapt this mentality about basketball. Like, even when I played basketball, my mentality was always like, I'm going to go out there and rip your throat out. I have, you know, friends that play in college and stuff, and they're like, oh, we're going to make each other better. We're going to play with friends. Like, you just kind of see that missing. That's what I was talking about with guys are just kind of friends, as opposed to like this mentality of like, I want to fucking kill you. You know, like that's kind of the thing that's missing for me in the league, which isn't a bad thing. I'm not saying that's like it was better back then than it is now. It's just different. You know what I mean?
No, I'm
and
with
I've
you.
Kind of come at peace with that with Kobe retiring, but that's what was so special about this Lakers-Celtics rivalry. It was just, it was insane. And it was so heated and passionate and real and raw. Yeah, I know that's a long-winded answer, no, but man, it's just the best, it's the best thing ever in NBA history, bar none.
It's unfair. It's an unfair question because there is no one single moment because there's so many great moments. Now, for me, I come at this from a very unique perspective, I think, because as huge of a Celtics fan as I obviously am, and everybody knows me to be, I don't have that same history that you do with your father and going to all of these games, because I'm first generation Greek. My parents came over. I was born in 1973. My parents came over 2 years before that. In fact, my father came here 2 years before that. My mom came over even after that. So they had no history. Basketball at that point, it's huge in Greece now, but it wasn't big then. And growing up, I didn't, even at a time where I would have been, you know, six or seven, and at the tail end of the 70s, I never got a real sense of any of basketball at that point. And even like 19, I had no real knowledge of like Larry Bird getting drafted. No one knew. I had no idea at that point in my life. And 84, I only went back in, like you did, to kind of really grasp the gravity of that. My first real memories were like 86, 87. Like, that's when I was really starting to say, like, wow, this is really, really good. I started to watch basketball before that. And I remember early on watching basketball thinking, how does anybody win this game? Nobody misses. Like, they just, I remember seeing everybody just keep hitting shots. I'm like, they just come down and he scores and he scores and he scores. Who wins? How do you win this game? So it wasn't until afterwards, now, when I started to get into becoming a basketball player myself in high school and starting to, at 14, 15, really understanding, like, wow, okay, this is what's been happening. And then me kind of going back the past few years, like, oh, okay, there was this, there was that, there was that. So my first kind of favorite thing was the 86 team, where, you know, just my, that's my first, like, holy shit, I like a really good team. These guys are really, really good. So that's kind of like my indoctrination. And only from there did I go back and learn about what the Celtics were and what the rivalry was truly about. My favorite moment overall was the Celtics championship, the Paul Pierce, because at that point, Pierce was the first guy that I really followed, first true Celtic I really followed from beginning to end. I'd seen the entire transformation of him from, malcontent to, brash kid, too cocky, that whole thing that went down with Team USA, and then the transformation that he made, and just the culmination of all of that. It was really the, if anybody's a wrestling fan, it was really like his true face turn, where that was, he was a heel up until that Indiana Pacers series. Then he had to come to Jesus with Doc Rivers, and then he started to turn, and people maybe weren't sure. And then Kevin Garnett comes in, and Ray Allen comes in, and then all of that stuff goes down, the wheelchair, the whole thing. And next thing you know, he's standing there with that MVP trophy raised up over his head, and you're like, he's a legend. Now he's a legend. So that really was my favorite moment. My favorite, besides all that, was my roommate in college, a guy I've talked about who has since passed. His nickname was Del. And for Bostonians who remember 88.9 at Night, he DJed for ERS, the Emerson College station under Dr. Del. He was LA. He was as big a Lakers fan as you got. There are two things. I won a bet with him in the 92 or 93 season. We had a season-long bet that the loser had to wear the other team's apparel for a week all over campus, and we won. So watching him walk around campus in the ugliest Celtics green shit, back in the days of the ugly Kelly Green starter jackets, that was hilarious. But within that was a game where, who was it that won a buzzer beater? Oh, I'm totally drawing a blank on his name. A buzzer beater against the Celtics in the Garden, Nick Van Exel. Nick Van Exel hit a turnaround jumper against the Celtics with his feet hovering over the sideline. And if he had put his heels down, he would have been out of bounds. But he turned and flicked that bullshit three in, and it cost me a lobster dinner as a college student, which sucked, but it was an awesome memory. So that's my long-winded kind of answer with a little bit of pro Lakers in it. So we each got one of those. All right, before we go, you're obviously heavily involved with the 2K franchise. So a lot of our listeners, a lot of basketball fans everywhere are hardcore gamers. Talk to us a little bit about the game and what's going on with the game.
Yeah, for sure. NBA 2K is something that was personally special to me growing up. Basketball was my life, and NBA 2K was always there. So I was fortunate enough to join the NBA 2K franchise just about 6 years ago now. So it's funny how time flies. The game's continuing to grow, and we're getting ready to get into NBA 2K18 season. Last year we had Legend Edition covers, and that featured Kobe Bryant, which was something that I was really happy about. And this year we got Shaquille O'Neal as the Legend Edition cover. So back-to-back Laker legends, and that really makes me happy. He's not in a Celtics jersey. Now I just had to throw that out on the Legend cover. He is in his Miami uniform on the Legend, and the Legend Edition gold features him in his Laker gold uni, as it should be. The game is just growing, and it's really fun to kind of see it expand as a fan of basketball and a fan of NBA 2K, because sometimes people forget that a lot of us that work there are fans too. It's not just you're talking about a subject because you're paid to. I keep it raw, I keep it real all the time when I talk to fans, when I express my passion for the game and the series. And I'm really excited with where we're going. Offer a ton of game modes for different kinds of players. If you like playing offline, online, you like playing quick games, or you like playing, simulation style basketball, we have all that covered. And it's really a special franchise created by developers who care about basketball like us, John. That's the cool thing about working here. You almost go from wow, Chris Manning, you're kind of a basketball nutcase. You won't even date girls on game nights because the Lakers are playing too. You come to a place and you're normalized for your passion of basketball. You know what I mean? And that's what's so cool about working at 2K for me personally. And it's just a really I feel blessed to kind of be there and be a part of the community and give constructive criticism to the developers and bring what fans are saying about the game, good and bad, to the developers and the producers so they can continue to, you know, grow this thing and really continue to make it a special product and something that brings a lot of joy into a lot of people's hearts.
I like creating myself and trying to see how good I can get myself.
There you go.
That's always my favorite thing to do. I don't know why. I like the creative player game modes where you can start being horrible and then you just try to be awesome. Yes. Because I was never good enough to play in the NBA, and this is as close as I'm going to get.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a fantasy, right? Like, it's now like an RPG for a lot of people. You know, people love basketball. They want to get to that level. And we introduced face scanning a couple years ago, and it's just insane to me that technology exists today where you can pick up your cell phone, scan your face into the game, and you become you. And you could build out how you want to play, however you want to play. I get a kick out of talking to NBA players that are bigs. One that I could bring up publicly because we did a broadcast was like Andre Drummond, huge NBA 2K fan, right? He doesn't play as himself or as a big. He plays as a guard because in real life he says no one ever passes me the ball, so now I get to be a ball hog. And, you know, we were playing with him one time on a live stream and he was just going 1-on-5 and not passing. And it was just awesome. You know, it's cool to see that kind of that role reversal there. So I think it's cool for a lot of fans. Like you just said, it, you know, we'll never make it to the NBA, but this kind of fulfills that fantasy of getting there and being a part of these different stories and just this stuff that we've brought to the game over the years. And I will say, if you like the creative player stuff and you like what you said, we should definitely link up in the future when we start talking NBA 2K18 futures, because we have some really innovative stuff coming, as I said, on 2K TV. So I'm really excited about what the future holds.
Yeah, I'm down with that. And if you ever need to do a blogger, podcaster edition of the covers, you know, just keep my name in the mix. You know, it's one of those just things that.
Hey, we should get you involved somehow. We'll figure out a way. Listen, I'm on this podcast. Like people, I'm one of those people, and you know this about me, John. Like we did a podcast, what, 10 years ago, maybe the last time, which is kind of insane to think about. Yeah. But I followed you on Twitter since before I was with 2K. I still follow you. I reach out all the time. We have fun interactions. I reached out because I just wanted to come on and talk, you know, Lakers Celtics with you and miss the 30 for 30. And it's just cool that, like, I never forgot my roots. I don't forget where I came from. Like, I keep in touch with people that I was in touch with before I was with 2K. And that's just kind of like how I feel about it. Like, you know, we had a great opportunity. We had fun helping each other out back in the day when we were helping grow the blogs and giving each other publicity and stuff like that. That's so cool, you know, to come back and, you know, do this podcast. It means a lot to me, as corny as that sounds.
No,
to come on. And I'm saying this to a Boston fan. What the hell is wrong with you?
You know, I always say this, that there are fans, you know, there are casual fans, there are some bandwagon fans. I'm never going to really get on anybody who, by virtue of where they were born, became a diehard fan of that particular team. If I was born in L.A., if I was born in New York, I'd grown up around the Knicks or the Lakers or whatever, there's no doubt I would have been that hardcore about a different team. And if you were born in Boston, you, as crazy as it sounds, and it just me talking about it, it feels weird, but you would have been a Celtics fan. We would have reversed this. Yep. And you'd be talking about how you love the blue collar, and I'd be sitting here thinking, you know, LeVar Ball ain't so bad. But that's just what it is. And I do feel a sense of pride whenever someone who's been blogging and who's been in the game this passionately for this long does something well. Like the starters, when I see them on TV, I am proud of those guys. Because
absolutely.
I've known those guys for a long time just because we were all sharing the same space. And I know Toss and Skeets, when they were putting together a show with a video camera in their apartment in Toronto, and now they're on NBA TV, and I'm like, I love that those guys did this. I love seeing that. I love seeing you doing 2K stuff. I love people geeking out that I'm talking to you on Twitter. That's awesome. It's awesome to see people and, you know, guys like, you know, Matt Moore and Zach Harper and Zach Lowe, all of these guys that he used to, you know, bum around with, and still, like, when I go to Summer League in July, will be kind of like shooting the shit with whatever. Like, we've all, through various channels, we've all reached some level of success. I do have a level of pride that this platform, this method of expressing our views and our writing skills and our talking skills has gotten them, gotten people to those points. So I'm excited about that stuff. So, and in the end, you know, you were born in LA and you're a Lakers fan. Oh, well, you know, that's your bad luck.
yeah, exactly. That's my curse. No, but you know, you're right about that. I think just, you know, knowing people over the years and seeing their success, it's something that really makes me happy. And like I said, when you do stuff and you're around people, when I come on this podcast, we're so crazy about basketball, it helps me feel normal in a way. You know, I married my wife and I kind of started, you know, trying to get to talk to her because she wrote an amazing story about how Kobe Bryant and LeBron James were comparable, and her takes on LeBron and Kobe at the time. This was, you know, 6-7 years ago now. Like, it's amazing to me that, you know, basketball can literally bring people together. And it's awesome to see people grow. It's awesome to see people, you know, having those advancements in their careers and stuff. And for the young kids listening, literally follow your passions. I know how cliche that sounds, and people used to tell me that. But I was very stubborn growing up. Maybe it's the Laker fan in me, but I was a very stubborn person growing up and when it came to my career. But I was extremely focused and trying to do what I want to do. And so I had to learn patience for sure. Maybe it's why I'm a patient Laker fan now. You know, like, there's a lot of fans that are like, anything happens and they're freaking out. I understand the bigger picture, long term, like, you got to be patient type of deal. But follow your passion, man. When you're passionate about basketball, when you're passionate about whatever it is in life, like, I always tell people, just follow your passion. You know, you might have to do things you don't want to do, but you got to do the things you have to do before you do the things you want to do. So just stay passionate, stay the course, keep going, you know?
I agree. You know, at least give it a shot. Follow your dreams. All right, guys, man, we talked for a long time, and that was us rushing through this. So
right.
We got to make sure that we don't go this long without a podcast again, because this is a lot of fun. And like I said, you're not bad for a Lakers fan, just like
there you go.
Said you were.
I'll buy you a beer one day. How about that? That'll be about as fun. There you go.
Hey, if you go to Summer League, I'll be at Summer League in Vegas. If you find
yourself
in Las Vegas.
Yeah, I have to see. This time of year gets a little tricky for me because we're getting ready to announce features for the next game, you know, the July, you know, August, September timeframe. But we're going to see.
I tell you what,
if I'm out there, I'm going to let you know for sure.
I'm going to pack my ping pong ball covered suit just in case you need anybody to do some motion capture stuff, you know, then just in case. I'm just throwing it out there. There you go. All right, buddy. Hey, thanks. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Remember to go to bostonpaintball.com and use the coupon code GREEN to get $50 off a group package from them. Remember to subscribe to our podcast, give it 5 stars, and leave us a rating. We don't ask you for money. That's all we ask you for. That really helps us out. And make sure that you follow our friend Chris Manning at LD2K. You get if you love 2K stuff, you're going to get all the latest updates. You're going to get everything straight from him. Chris, thank you so much for joining us once again. It's been a pleasure and a show that could definitely have gone on twice as long. So,
absolutely, man. Pleasure to join you, man. It's good talking to you again.
Yeah, man. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for listening. This has been the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.